conduct. Today is Tuesday, July 26, 2016, and we're here for a post-suspension hearing concerning the Honorable Craig Doyle, County Judge, Conroe, Montgomery County, Texas, cause number CJC-16-0929-CO. Before we begin, have a few little rules for those attending the hearing, including members of the media. You're welcome to observe and take written and electronic notes during the proceeding. You're prohibited from making an audio or video recording of the proceedings, including but not limited to recordings with cameras, phones, or other devices. Still photography is permissible, providing it is taken before or after the proceedings. The hearing is being audio recorded by the agency, and a copy of that recording will be made available upon written request to the Executive Director of the Commission. Commission members and Commission staff are not authorized to discuss this or any other case. Any public comments from the Commission will come through the chair. We're here today at the request of Judge Craig Doyle, Montgomery County Judge, to conduct a post-suspension hearing pursuant to Rule 15A of the Texas Procedural Rules for the removal or retirement of judges. At this time, I'll ask the other members of the commission serving on this panel to identify themselves for the record, beginning to my right.
Judge, my name is Judge David Hall. I'm a county court of law judge from Sweetwater, Texas.
Good morning. My name is Orlinda Naranjo, and I am a district court judge here in Travis County.
Good morning, Judge. My name is Demetrius Vivens. I'm an attorney member. I live in Fort Bend.
Good morning. I'm Douglas Lang. I sit on the 5th District Court of Appeals in Dallas.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm David Russell. I'm a public member from Hayes County.
Good morning, Judge. My name is Catherine Wiley. I'm a municipal court judge for the City of Houston.
And I'm Valerie, a public member from Dallas. All right. Judge Doyle, would you please identify yourself for the record?
My name is Craig Doyle, Montgomery County Judge.
Thank you. And you have the right to be represented by counsel today, and I know that you do. Counsel, would you please state your name for the record?
Rusty Harden.
Thank you very much. Judge Doyle, before we proceed, I'm going to warn you that this is a public proceeding, and anything you or your witnesses say today may be used against you in a court of law. You do have a right to remain silent. Knowing and understanding your rights, as I have explained them to you, are you ready and willing to proceed, including answering any questions the commission members may have for you today?
Yes, ma'am.
Judge Doyle, according to our records, you were indicted on or about June 24, 2016 by a grand jury for the 221st Judicial District Court, Montgomery County, Texas. You were charged with one count of conspiracy to circumvent Title V, Subtitle A, Chapter 551 of the Texas Government Code, known as the Texas Open Meetings Act. Judge, as of today, are you still under indictment for the offense I just identified?
Yes, ma'am.
Is this the only criminal charge pending against you?
Yes, it is.
In accordance with Article 5, Section 1-86A of the Texas Constitution and Rule 15A of the Texas Procedural Rules for the removal or retirement of judges, and because you were indicted while serving as a county judge, the commission suspended you from office without pay by order issued on or about June 28, 2016. Judge, under Rule 15A, you have the burden of demonstrating at this hearing that continued service would not jeopardize the interests of parties involved in court proceedings over which the judge would preside, nor impair public confidence in the judiciary. That burden shall govern the scope of these proceedings. This is not an adversarial proceeding. Any records and testimony received from you and or your witnesses, along with argument from your counsel, will be considered by the commission in determining whether or not you have met your burden. Members of the public may also register with their positions by completing and submitting a witness affirmation form located as you came in. Testimony from fact witnesses, character witnesses, or experts may be introduced through oral testimony or affidavit. The commission reserves the right to limit the number of witnesses who may testify should the testimony be deemed cumulative or irrelevant. Depending on the number of individuals who register to testify, the commission may limit the testimony to 5 minutes. Pursuant to Section 33.032G of the Texas Government Code, the proceeding today is public. It is also being recorded. The recording and any documents submitted as evidence today become public records upon filing with the commission. You and any member of the public are entitled to a copy of the recording and or records at your own expense. A decision will not be made today. The recommendation of this panel will be presented to the full commission at its next regular scheduled meeting, which will be August 10th through 12th, 2016. And the decision will be made at that time. The commission will notify you through your counsel whether the suspension will be continued, terminated, or modified. For those who wish to register a position or present testimony at this hearing, please complete and submit to the clerk of the commission one of the witness affirmation forms. We will call you, I have those forms, and we will call you to the microphone in the order we receive the forms. At this time, all those present who expect to testify in the proceeding, including Judge Doyle, please stand and raise your right hand for the oath. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
All right, at this time, I'm Judge Doyle, and your counsel, you may proceed with the hearing.
If I may, this will be primarily by Judge Doyle. I just wanted to make a couple of preliminary comments to suggest to the panel where we're directing our observations to you. As you know, Rule 15, clearly by its language, anticipates that it applies to a judicial judge. If you notice, if one once reads it, the suspended judge has the right to a post-suspension hearing to demonstrate the continued service would not jeopardize the interest of parties involved in court proceedings over which the judge would preside. He is a non-judicial county judge. He's the elected administrative county judge who has no judicial duties, has actually specifically in the past declined to ever exercise judicial duties. So he certainly doesn't come under that portion of the rule. And then the second would be over which judge would preside, nor impair public confidence in the judiciary. He is also not a member of the judiciary. He's an elected executive subject to civil recall by any complaint of a citizen that is the county attorney in that jurisdiction chooses to prosecute and proceed. We are not suggesting that you do not have jurisdiction over him because the Constitution doesn't distinguish in its language between a judicial county judge and an executive county judge. But as you know better than I, your duties and your responsibilities are permissive. It doesn't say you shall suspend. It says you may suspend. And what we're here to urge and direct our attention to is that not only does his suspension not impair the reputation of the judiciary or adversely affect people that might appear from it, neither of which are present, but his suspension works to the tremendous disadvantage of the citizens of Montgomery County and the exercise of the government. And we're here to urge you to both reinstate him, obviously with pay, but also to reinstate him for his duties. During this period of time, this is a very important period of time for the administration of the government in Montgomery County. The people that are here at their own suggestion. The people who chosen and stood to speak are here at their own suggestion. But there is a cross-section that you have received from us of city council people, who are city governments, as all of you know, not county government, county officials, the sheriff, and others. And I think what you will find uniformly from these people is that this man is needed to help run the county, which is one of the fastest growing counties in this country, and it needs its administrators. And in no way would his reinstatement impair the performance of the judiciary or his reputation. I'll turn it over to you.
Before we get started,
yes.
We have a question.
Mr. Arden, I'm Doug Lang, as I introduced myself before. I just wanted to ask you a question.
Sure.
You
do you and the judge intend to address this declining to do take on judicial duties?
Yes, I suspect. I suspect the judge will be glad to address that.
Okay, if you could, we don't want to tell you how to present your case. We'd like to know about that part of it.
A long time ago, I learned that it's always helpful to follow the request of those who are deciding your case. And so I'll be glad to ask him to do that. One thing I would mention is that what is unusual about this, first of all, I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity for a public hearing rather than in private, because I think you'll find from him and his history that his whole career has been devoted to transparency in county government, which is one of the ironies of this charge. And also, if we really believe this man was guilty of anything, I think everyone in this panel knows that my malpractice insurance wouldn't cover me allowing him to come give a public statement on recording that, as he's been advised, could always be used against him. I think the fact that we're here for him to talk publicly on the record is a measure of how convinced we are that he has done nothing wrong and he wants to be restored.
Madam Chairman, committee members, thank you for this opportunity.
I'm going to follow Judge Lane. There's something also.
Yes.
There's also something else I would like you to address if you're able to do it, or maybe your attorney can't, and that is how the process occurred that a special prosecutor was assigned to this case. I haven't seen much on that, and I was a little interested in how a special prosecutor, I don't know if you intended to bring that up, but I...
We did, but I can address it very quickly. The district attorney would have had jurisdiction over this, and he recused himself. His first assistant, a now Judge Grant, at the time this occurred, was running for the district bench, an open bench by resignation. They used the same political consultant. And that political consultant is now one of those that has been indicted, but he was one of those being investigated. And so the district attorney recused himself and asked for the appointment of a special prosecutor because his first assistant was using the same political consultant that was involved in this particular set of facts.
All right, I promise I won't
interrupt. That's all right. Thank you for the
This is the first time you've ever seen a lawyer try to quit talking.
Go ahead.
Madam Chairman and committee, thank you for the opportunity, and Judge Lang, to first address that question. At our last commissioners and judges conference, I asked if I needed to get continuing education hours, and they said as long as I was not providing judicial functions that I did not need those credit hours, those continued education hours. So by not taking those credit hours, I assume that I'm not even eligible to do any kind of judicial function in my job. Mine is purely the administrator of the county, and so don't provide any court hearings or any judicial function as it relates to the law at all.
Thank you for that explanation, but... Is it your understanding, though, that you are not barred or prohibited by law from acting as an adjudicative function? For instance, if there was some need to magistrate or to deal with a mental illness case or something like that. You have the legal authority to do that.
I don't know that I do, honestly. I mean, the previous judge that was there for 20 years before I took this position never did any of those type of functions that I'm aware of, and never assumed that I would be doing any of that.
And he's not a lawyer.
And I'm not an attorney.
Right. To whatever extent, though, you're not aware of any statute or other law that would say that the county judge of your county may not act in a judicial defense.
That I'm aware of, no, sir.
Thank you.
What I thought I'd do is just kind of give you a background on myself, a little bit to let you know who I am, where I come from, and the facts of this situation. I'm a fourth generation resident of Montgomery County. Graduated from Conroe High School, put myself through Texas A&M University with a roofing business. I graduated in 1984. After a couple of years out of school, I was approached to run for county commissioner in 1986. I was 24 years old. Ran for county commissioner at that time. There was four of us that were running against a then incumbent. I became very close friends with one of the individuals that I was running as an opponent with to the incumbent. When he won the election in 1986, he hired me as his administrative assistant to come to work for him. That was Commissioner Malcolm Purvis. For about 14 and a half years, I served as the chief of staff for the administrative assistant to Commissioner Malcolm Purvis until 2001, when he passed away. I was appointed then to fill the balance of his term. That was in 2001. I ran in 2002. Had four opponents at that time. We took 67% of the vote and was unopposed in 2006 and in 2010. So I've been with the county for most of my adult career. I ran for county judge in 2014. I was successful in that race. It was a very bitterly fought race. There was a group in Montgomery County, the Patriot Fight Group, the Tea Party Group, that was very bitterly opposed to my running because we'd been there quite a long time. We prevailed in that election, won and took office of county judge in January of 2015. So almost the last 30 years I've been a county employee working for the citizens of Montgomery County. In January of 2015, knowing the rapid growth of Montgomery County, we decided to look at a bond issue. We had a bond issue that had failed in 2011, and the reason that bond issue failed was because the opposition said we failed to provide enough information about what roads were going to be on that bond issue. So in January of 2015, we put together a citizens committee to begin to identify projects. There was two individuals appointed by each member of commissioner's court to begin to look at a road bond. We had multiple meetings in our courtroom and the city council chambers and other areas where we brought in maps of all of the precincts and had people from all over Montgomery County come in with magic markers and highlighters and draw lines on those maps to determine where they felt roads needed to be addressed. We ended up with about 140 projects on that list. The Citizens Committee then took that list with the help of a group of engineers, local engineers in the Houston area, and started putting dollar amounts to each one of those projects. They then determined that what dollar amount they felt like a bond issue could be passed in Montgomery County. The number they came up with was $350 million. And so they started prioritizing that list of roads with the dollar amounts on them, not necessarily by precinct, but just by priorities. Normally, in the past, all of our other bond issues, we had divided just 25% to each precinct and let the commissioners decide how they were going to spend it. In this particular case, they took the roads by priority picking so that the actual percentage per precinct was not equal. It was different in each of the precincts, but the roads were picked by priority by this citizens committee. Ended up with 77 projects on that list, a total right at $350 million. We put the bond issue out in May of 2015. There was significant opposition to one particular project on that list, the extension of the Woodlands Parkway. A lot of people started a lot of comments about the bond issue, a lot of rhetoric that was out there that the county was the seventh, or the county was the most indebted county in the state of Texas, that we had a lot of pork projects on the list. There was one project that was called the Cecil Bell Highway because it was a project that ran in front of Cecil Bell's home, one of our state representatives. There was a concern that there was a lot of money being spent, long-term debt being issued to do maintenance work on roadways, a lot of things that just attacked the bond issue. Well, that bond issue failed in May of 2015. Now, immediately after that bond issue failed, we had citizens begin to come to our commissioner's court at every one of our commissioner's meetings, every other Tuesday, for about 3 months. They came and asked us to put the bond issue back on the ballot, put it back in November of 15. We weren't really interested in doing that because most of the comments that we heard were from people that had opposed the bond issue in May. I thought, well, I'm not going to put it back out there just to have them go beat it up again. It was the same people that had fought me in my race in 2014, myself and Commissioner Riley. So So there wasn't a lot of attention given to that, but yet they came every month. In August, we started hearing from people that were supporters of the bond issue saying, look, we really need to reconsider this for a November 15 bond issue. We're drowning in traffic. We're the seventh fastest growing county in the nation. If you've been in Montgomery County any time at all or tried to travel in the roads, you know that we're congested at every turn. And so knowing that we needed a bond issue, I really didn't want to put it out there just to have it defeated again for the same reasons that the first one was. Barb Sadler, our immediate past county judge, came to court one day and mentioned that he felt like there was a coalition, a movement among some of the opposition to really get serious about getting behind the bond issue that made good sense. Mr. Davenport, the political consultant that Mr. Hardin mentioned earlier, was in the room, and he asked me, he said, if I could put together a meeting with the Patriots PAC, with the guys that opposed it so vehemently, would you sit down and talk to them? And my first response to that was, no, I had no interest in doing that. But he continued, and I thought, well, yeah, I would do that, because we started hearing more and more that people, supporters, really wanted this bond issue passed. We wanted it back on the ballot for November. So I agreed to sit down to meet with members of the Patriot PAC. In the meantime, they were working on putting together an MOU to spell out some of the things that they wanted to see on a bond issue, what the opposition would feel comfortable with. Now, there were some emails that went back and forth different places to different people that were spelling some of that out. I got some of those emails, some of them I read, some of them I didn't, because I really didn't think that meeting would ever actually happen. There was that bitter of animosity between us and the other group. Over a period of time, they put together some ideas that we thought might work, and I agreed to sit down and have a meeting. When I sat down with the members of the Patriot PAC, and we talked about a lot of the issues that were used to defeat the May bond issue, the idea that we were the most debt-laden county in the state, and I told them that we fund all of our debt service with 7.25% of our revenue, and we started to kill some of those concerns. The idea that roads were pork. Some of the projects that they deemed as pork were roads that had cracks in them so wide you couldn't drive a motorcycle down because the roads were coming apart. I don't know how you deem a project like that pork when you're trying to repair those kind of roadways. The fact that they called one of the projects the Cecil Bell Highway because it went in front of Cecil Bell's home. Well, it's a road that when the new high school was built in Magnolia, a lot of the high school traffic used that road to cut through to get to Nickel Sawmill Road. Traffic had increased substantially. The road was coming apart. The concern was about long-term debt being issued for short-term projects. We talked about how our financial advisor had told us that we were going to finance some of these projects on shorter-term bonds, which it just made good sense. And they realized that there was some thought process in here. They listened to what we had to say. I listened to what they had to say. One of their concerns was a $350 million bond was maybe too much. We should reduce it to $280 at this time with a bond issue for $70 million in 3 years. Because at that time, the price of oil had started to decline. People were losing jobs. There was a concern about issuing that kind of debt. I thought that made perfectly good sense. We could take $280 now, see what the economy does over the next 3 years, do $70 million later, get back to that original $350 million amount. Or maybe more if the economy gets better, if the economy turns south, maybe we don't do a bond issue in 3 years at all. But it made sense not to issue the full amount of the debt at the time. We used the same list of projects that was created in the May bond issue that was put together by the Citizens Committee. Same exact list of roads, except for the Woodlands Parkway, which was very controversial. Commissioner Riley agreed to take that bond issue off the list, or that road off of the list. We divided the money between the precincts, exactly the same percentages that was on the May bond issue. Nothing changed in those areas. And so when we sat down, we kind of hammered out some of our differences, and we found those issues that we could agree on, that they felt like they could support a bond issue on. When 10% of the voters come out to vote, an organized group can have a tremendous impact on a bond issue. So I felt like it was my duty to sit down with the opposition to that bond issue and not do like Washington does, where people plant their political flags and no one communicates and nothing gets accomplished. So I reached out across those lines to people that fought me bitterly in my campaign, fought the original bond issue bitterly, to find a way to get a good bond issue in place, a citizens group, not a group of commissioners, a citizens group. Once we found some common ground that we felt like would make sense, we put out a press release and told people that's exactly what we had done. We had come together with some common agreement here. put out a press release telling everybody what we had done, inviting people to come to our next commissioner's court meeting and give their input. That was on a Friday afternoon that we issued that press release. The commissioner's court meeting was set then for Monday afternoon. The next Monday we had, well, there was 14 people that came in support, that spoke, citizens that came in support of putting the bond issue back on the ballot for November, which is what we chose to do. The commissioners then approved putting the bond issue back on the ballot for the voters to have a voice in this bond issue. We didn't approve the bond issue. We didn't award a contract. We didn't hire a consultant. We put a bond issue back on the ballot to give the voters a voice, and then gave them 2 months to decide how they wanted to cast that vote. And the voters passed the bond issue overwhelmingly by 60%. I feel like I did what my job is, and that was to find a way to get some roads built in a county that's drowning in traffic, to bring two opposing sides together, the commissioner's court and a group of citizens, to get a bond issue that made sense, that they could get behind and support for the greater good of Montgomery County. For the last 30 years, that's what I've done, oftentimes at my own personal expense. Being a county employee is my only source of income. I've worked long and hard. It means something to me to be the county judge of Montgomery County. My office is 2 blocks from the house that my dad was born in. I've worked hard for the greater good of Montgomery County each and every day, and I can tell you that I don't know how we could have done more to get the public involved in this bond issue, to give them an opportunity to see what we were doing, to give them a voice in what was occurring. And that's where we sit today. I feel like I did my job, and I don't know how else I could have done more to be open and transparent to the public. Since I've been in office for the last year and a half, I've created several policies that have helped enhance mobility, enhance transparency in county government. We put together a citizens committee to review elected official salary. We put together a active internet site so people can go and look at each one of these bond issue projects and see what the progress of each of these projects is. We've tried to be very inclusive of the public and have them involved as much as possible. And I would ask today that you allow me to go back to my office and do my job, the job that I was elected by the citizens of Montgomery County to do. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
May I ask him a couple of questions?
Yes, sir.
And then to follow up. The meeting, I believe the date of the meeting is August 21st, is that right, of 2015?
Yes, sir.
That was a Friday?
Yes, sir. It occurred on Thursday morning and on Friday afternoon.
I need to keep your voice up, even though you're talking to me, you got to talk to the microphone.
Sorry.
And who was at the meeting with these citizens?
It's Commissioner Riley, Mark Davenport, Jim Fredericks, my chief of staff, was there. And then from the Patriots back, we had John Bauman, Phil O'Sullivan, and Julie Turner.
All right. So were there only 2 commissioners at the meeting?
Yes, sir.
Commissioner Riley?
Only 2 commissioners.
Commissioner Riley has also been indicted, has he not?
Correct, yes, sir.
And who else was indicted with you?
Commissioner Clark and Mark Davenport, the political consultant.
All right. And, of course, the 2 commissioners have not been suspended because the Judicial Conduct Commission has no jurisdiction over them.
Correct, yes, sir.
So they're still serving while their indictment is pending.
Yes, sir.
In addition, on that meeting on the 21st, did you contact any other commissioners, head of or so, seeking their support?
I did not, no, sir.
In fact, if you entered in a meeting dealing with your constituents, did you already know from the past election the position of the other commissioners?
Yes, sir. Each of the commissioners supported the May bond issue loudly and strongly. I knew the commissioners knew we needed a bond issue. That was not a concern. My concern was this group going to go out, this group of citizens going to go out and fight this same bond issue again, just like they did the first one. The reason we did the MOU was there was not a great deal of trust between us, myself and Charlie Riley, and the Patriots PAC. They were concerned that we were going to do a bait and switch. We were going to put a bond issue back on the ballot and slip the Woodlands Parkway back on that list, which the MOU spelled out that we would not do that. We were concerned that they wanted to put a bond issue back on the ballot so they could go defeat it again and claim victory. But not a lot of trust there.
When y'all agreed, this memorandum of understanding, did that bind the county to anything?
No. The MOU is a non-binding agreement. It was an agreement between Commissioner Riley and myself and the Patriots PAC to present this to Commissioner's Court. The MOU doesn't bind the court to anything. In fact, the list of roads that was ultimately chosen for the bond issue wasn't even memorialized until sometime in mid-September.
Could you have put single-handedly, without the memorandum, could you have put the bond issue, the new proposed bond issue, on the agenda by yourself?
Yes, sir.
Could
yes,
Commissioner Riley have put it on the agenda by yourself?
He could have, yes.
Did you need any type of understanding with the citizens group to be able to put that issue on the agenda?
Didn't need the understanding with them to put it on the agenda, but we wanted that to ensure that if we did put it on the agenda, that they would be supportive of it.
And so was county government or anyone bound by your understanding with this group of citizens that you would put it on the agenda?
No, sir. In fact, in the MOU, it states that it is a non-binding agreement, that commissioners could have a choice of whatever roads they wanted to put on that on the bond issue.
Did you at any time, privately in any way, lobby any of the other commissioners for anything having to do with putting that on the agenda?
No, sir, I did not. Well, I will tell you that citizens came before our commissioner's court, every commissioner's court meeting, every other week, for months, telling us exactly what they were spelling out, what they wanted in this bond.
And then on that Friday, and once y'all finished your meeting, did you announce the meeting to the public at large?
Yes, we did. We put a press release out announcing that we had met with the Patriot Pact, we'd come to an agreement, and I planned to put the bond issue back on our commissioner's court to see if we could get it put back on a ballot.
And I believe that announcement to the public of the agreement is included as one of the exhibits we've given to
the committee. I think that it's in there, yes, sir.
In addition, and to announcing that the public, did you then make a public posting that issue would come before Commissioner's Court on the following Monday, the 24th?
Yes, we did. We posted it like we would in our 72-hour posting before any meeting, invited people to come and give input. And like I said, there was 14 people that actually came, and each and every one of them supported putting the bond issue back on the ballot.
And then and only then, in a public meeting, was there a vote asked for as to whether or not to put it back on the ballot?
Yes, sir.
And the vote was what?
It was 5-0.
Did you do any lobbying of any member of that commission, or excuse me, of the commission's court before the vote was taken in any non-public way?
I didn't need to. The commissioners all knew we needed a bond issue. They supported it in May. It's the same list of roads, the same percentage division of money. There was nothing to deliberate.
And you touched on it, but I want to ask you, what type of situation does this put you and your family in to be suspended without pay?
Well, this is my only source of income. Imagine yourself without a salary. And I've been a county employee for 30 years. I'm not flush. It's pretty tough.
I invite questions.
All right. At this time, we will ask the commission members if they have any questions for you.
Judge, I don't have any questions at this time.
And this really might go to the attorney instead of the judge, and that is, in reading your response, I noted that, are you taking the position that the commission does not have any authority to suspend the judge, Judge Doyle, because he was not performing any judicial, he does not perform any judicial or does not have any judicial duties?
Judge, I don't think I quite took that position. What the position I took is that you should not, and that as a matter of policy, that I think it is a mistake for the Judicial Conduct Commission to suspend a non-judicial county judge. The issue as to whether or not you certainly have jurisdiction over a county judge, whether he or she is a judicial county judge or not, the Constitution gives that to you. But your charter is a permissive one as to, and that's what I have really been directing my conduct. I do not believe, and I say this at the risk of offending you or any one of the members of the commission, I do not think it is appropriate. That's different than whether you have the power or authority. I'm not ready to go there yet, but I don't think it's appropriate for a non-judicial officer to be suspended by a commission that is really designed in its own website and in its own rules to deal with judicial officers as opposed to executive officers. And the judicial officers that you ordinarily have jurisdiction that you're usually hearing about are not subject to, for instance, the civil removal statute. that this elected county judge is. And I've taken the position that both as a matter of policy and fairness, that the presumption of innocence ought to apply to him just like it does to anyone else. And that in deciding the decision by this commission, I respectfully am asking it to be done on a case-by-case basis, not an automatic policy. And in a case where a person is a non-judicial officer, not exercising judicial duties, that it is more appropriate left to the political process and the criminal justice process, both of which he is subject to, rather than have suspend him without a trial, before a trial, and when there are other remedies available.
Thank you. The other question I have is, now it's my understanding, just reading what you've provided, is that the county attorney also took the position that any actions taken by Judge Doyle and other commissioners did not violate the Open Meetings Act. Is that correct?
That is correct. And so the very officer that has the responsibility under the statutes of this state to conduct a civil removal if he chooses to, has chosen not to after looking at the facts and evidence. And so in light of all that, we believe that it's appropriate to let this commission reinstate him and let it run its course in the criminal justice system. As you know, if he is convicted of this, he is automatically suspended from office. But that will have been after a trial, and it will be after the imposition of the law. And I feel very strongly that this was not really designed. I think if we look at Rule 15, it seems to me that the drafters of Rule 15 were not thinking of people in this man's position. As evidence of the fact that I checked as recently today, we know of no case in the history of this commission in which a non-judicial county judge has been suspended prior to trial. I stand to be corrected by Ms. Willing, but I asked and she checked. I think she's probably 99% sure I'm right. She just hasn't been able to check every single precedent so that she's comfortable with 100%. But I believe I'm safe in saying this commission has not previously suspended a non-judicial county judge pending his trial.
And then, sir, it is your client, Judge Doyle, as well as yourself, that it is your position that putting Judge Doyle back as the head of the county, as the head administrator, would not undermine public confidence. And I know this is in the judiciary, but, you know, for our purposes, you believe that that is true. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. You're right on all points. That is exactly what we're saying. And indeed, that's the measure of just a small number of people here. I think, and again, you know, whenever you're talking to the trier of fact and you're urging a different position, I get very nervous about saying what I'm about to say because I don't want to prejudice his case. But I would make the argument as gently as I could that refusal to reinstate it by a non-elected body for this decision of an elected official that has the support of his community and the job he's doing, that would have a bigger risk of undermining the public's respect than leaving him out of office. I say that as gently and diplomatically as I can, but I feel strongly that if you poll the citizens of Montgomery County, they don't understand why, unlike anybody else, he is suspended without pay when the presumption of innocence is still should be in operation. He's basically been deprived of his income and his job while waiting to stand trial. Ironically, the other people charged in this case have not. And the reason is they will stand ready for trial and they'll be removed if they're found guilty. So I would, all three points that you make, Your Honor, I those are the ones I'm urging.
Thank you.
I just have a generic question, and
yes,
that is, what assurances could you provide to the commission that you would, in fact, not perform the judicial duties while you were under this indictment?
I can give you my word, Judge, that I would not. I never have, and don't know of any judicial functions that I would ever.
Your understanding that you had refused, is that the term you used?
Well, I don't think
judicial functions.
It's my understanding that I'm not eligible to do judicial functions just simply because I haven't had the training to do any of those functions. I did not take any, when we went to our commissioners and judges conference, I was told that I didn't have to get any of the continued education hours that would allow me to serve in those capacities. So it's my assumption that not having those hours would preclude me from being able to perform any of those functions. And certainly wouldn't. We have five JP courts, we have five county courts at law, and seven district courts in Montgomery County, along with a couple of associate judges. There's plenty of judges in Montgomery County to provide all the judicial function necessary.
And I understand that. I was more centered on the statement you said you declined. How did you decline?
Can I interrupt just a minute? Excuse me, Mr. Bivens. That's my probably misspoking. I think I was the one who used to decline. I was referring to what he has said, but I don't think he chose not to take those courses and assumed. I misspoke probably and used the word decline. I thought that that was an affirmative action. He's I think more accurately said it was only affirmative in the sense I chose not to do it and thought I couldn't do it as a result.
Okay, I was just seeing if there was some kind of formal way you attempted to decline.
I thought maybe there was.
Send it to somebody. No.
I've never been asked to perform any judicial functions, and just in my own mind would assume that I couldn't simply because I don't have the training that's required for the judges that do that kind of, provide that kind of function.
Thank you, Judge.
I have no questions.
Thank you.
Thank you again for your appearance today. I would like to probe a little bit what type of training you had at the point that you became the judge, the county judge, on the restrictions, requirements of the Texas Open Meetings Act.
As a commissioner, you know, we went to commissioners and judges conference every year to get continued education hours. I took a couple of classes, went to a couple of the sessions on the Open Meetings Act. So I'm well aware that I cannot sit down with two other commissioners and discuss, deliberate any of the functions or any of the actions that may come before our court.
Thank you. And prior to your meetings with the Texas Patriots Pack, did you and or Commissioner Riley and or Mr. Davenport discuss in any form the concerns about the Texas Open Meetings Act?
Well, in fact, there's a notation from one of the members of the Patriots PAC that talks about how we need to be careful not to violate the Texas Open Meetings Act. We're very well aware of that. And I never met with two commissioners to talk about the bond issue or to deliberate what would be on that bond issue. No, sir.
Is there anything you would do differently if this same situation came up, a similar situation came up, to try to avoid there being a perception by someone that there had been a violation?
Well, I would still have reached out to the opposition to find a way to get that bond issue put together. Differently, I don't know. Just try to be as transparent as possible to let people know exactly what's going on. That's what I try to do here. That's why we put the press release out, to let people know that we had met with the Patriots PAC, that we'd come to an agreement, that they were willing to support the bond issue. I've always tried to be as transparent as possible.
And one last question, Ms. Rahm. Your district attorney declined to call for an indictment, but the special prosecutor apparently convinced the grand jury to issue the indictment. What is your perception of why that happened? What type of motivations there may have been that led to that indictment?
Hard-pressed for me to tell you what was in the minds of the grand jurors. I don't know. I know that there was... I don't know how to answer that question.
You had referenced political opponents before, including the Texas Patriots PAC, but apparently
I don't think this was a political sabotage. I don't think that at all. Matter of fact, I think that the Patriots PAC sat down with us in good faith, as we sat down with them in good faith, to try to find a way to get that bond issue passed. I don't think it was an intentional setup or an attack. I don't feel that way at all.
Okay, thank you very much.
Judge, I just have a couple of questions. Why was there a need to meet with this group privately? I understand what your goal was. I understand that. But why was there a need to meet with them privately versus having it in an open forum?
The reason was just a matter of expedience. We didn't realize, I never really was sure that meeting would actually take place. The 24th was the last day that we could possibly call for that bond issue. Our meeting took place on the 21st, Friday before the weekend, before that Monday the 24th. And so we were kind of down to the wire as far as time on when we could call the bond issue. So we met in my office, had them come, they came to visit, and we sat down and hashed out all of our differences and then put the press release out.
Looking back on that now, with the time frame being such a crunch, do you think it may have been more appropriate to let it take its course to the next year, I guess?
The easy thing, Judge, would have been just to say, I'm done, and say, no, we'll wait till November of 2016. The concern that we had was that there was some state funding that we could leverage some of those bond dollars against, and if we didn't have those bond dollars last year, we might lose some of that state funding with the dollars to leverage them against. And so it became apparent to me that there was a lot of support out there from people that had opposed the bond and had supported the bond to get it back on the ballot in November. It was an effort on my part to try to do the best we could to have an impact on Montgomery County as quickly as possible.
Can I ask a question about the political consultant, Mr. Davenport? How was he compensated for what he did in regard to this?
He wasn't. He had done some political consulting for me in the past. Mm-hmm. He knew members of the Patriot PAC. He knew myself and Commissioner Riley, and he said, hey, if I can put this meeting together, I'd be glad to try to do that for you. He wasn't compensated by me.
Nor the county. In your response, your July 20th response to the commission, you explained that it would be improper to have a quorum. And now it seems like it's not proper without a quorum. So I know that's a conundrum, but how could you, and this kind of is kind of a secondary question to my counsel here, but how could you be successful, and is there a way that you could have still been successful by doing it properly? You told me there's time constraints, but is there a way that you could have been just as successful by doing it the proper way?
I guess, how do you mean the proper way?
Well, if you're saying you did it proper because you didn't have a quorum and it wasn't really transparent, I mean, that's what you're all about. That's what your history has been about, to be transparent. How could you have done this differently so it would have had a different ending, if you will? Not the ending about the good news that you got the bill passed and that sort of thing, but how could it have been a better ending and you not be here today?
It could have been, if we had met with the Patriots PAC earlier and had more time to provide opportunity for people to be more involved, it would have been better. We just kind of ran short of time. I really didn't expect that meeting would really truly happen until we were kind of at the end of the line as far as time. Now, I felt comfortable in the fact that the list of projects was the same list that the Citizens Committee had put together. The list that they were proposing, the division of money between the precincts was exactly the same in terms of percentage as the May bond issue. I felt like there were so many things that were so similar to the May bond issue, with the exception of the Woodlands Parkway being on there, and their request that we put some more money toward maintenance in our commissioners' budgets, which we had done in our previous budget in July already. I felt comfortable with with the compromise we had achieved.
Okay. No further questions.
Your Honor, may I address that just a tad bit?
Please.
I think what's important here is when we talk about proper or improper, there are some very strong disagreements, legal disagreements, among what the Open Meetings Act requires and what's a violation. our position's been through this so long that there wasn't anything wrong done with this. Otherwise, elected officials would never have been able to meet in their office with citizens if there wasn't a quorum of the county commissioners there. If this idea, and I think some of you may be aware, maybe all of you, that part of the state's theory here is that Mr. Davenport was some kind of roving quorum, that he was going to talk to other people and that he was therefore creating something improper. But I will tell you that with our firm now is my best friend, and for a long time was on the Court of Criminal Appeals, Judge Kathy Cochran. The letter we presented to you is a large portion product of Kathy's research and writing. And so when you read that letter as to our version of what the law is, you're talking about one person's opinion who spent 11, 14 years on the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. And she has a different view than the prosecutor who presented this case to the grand jury. I have a different view. It doesn't. One of the things that I'm constantly trying to get people to understand is sometimes there are legitimate disagreements about the law and a set of facts. It doesn't require one side or the other to be evil or have evil motives. And I unabashedly believe the prosecutor and whatever he told the grand jury the law was in this case was mistaken. Not ill motive, not politically directed, but wrong. And I think the state's theory here as to whether this was a violation is clearly legally wrong. And whether I'm right or not, my own view is that'll ultimately be what the resolution of this is in the criminal court. So what you have is an indictment based on the view of the law that I respectfully suggest is just flat wrong. Sometimes I'm wrong, sometimes they're wrong. And that's why we create the courts, that's why we have judges, and that's why really we're asking y'all to step back and let him resume his duties and let it work its way through the courts and see who's right about this. Because it would be a very, very sad thing if a man who's his only source of income and his position and the citizens are deprived over an issue that reasonable minds very strongly disagree about. And I think one reason it is so hard to get people to run for public office now is quite frankly this kind of situation where I challenge anyone in this room to comfortably, intuitively know whether a course of action by an elected official now in light of the atmosphere is or is not a violation of the Open Records Meetings Act. Some things are black letter easy, but if two citizens come to his office and another commissioner's right there next door, Bill, come on in. And these people have some complaints and they say, we'd like something to be presented. The person they asked to present it, it happens to be an individual commissioner, but he could put it on the agenda, he could. And then all of a sudden, they don't take a position, they don't make any decision, they don't deliberate in that meeting. They just simply say, okay, I'll put it on the agenda and let people see. What's really unique about this is they didn't just have as soon as they reached them, these two people said, okay, well, we'll put it on the agenda. They announced the meeting. They tell the world at large there was a meeting so that the public can come in on Monday and complain about it if they want. They not only that, they make public the memorandum of understanding they did with them. And all they did was not anything that results in a passage of a bond issue. They simply say, we're going to put it on an agenda for commissioners later to decide and the public to vote. I would be, if the special prosecutor or whatever he told them, understanding of violation of the Public Meetings Act is right, I would cringe at being a public official or a county commissioner or anyone who has to make decisions, because I don't know how you do it with any assurance that you're not violating somebody's view of the law.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jeff, do I have a question on the pay issue? Are there any extraordinary financial issues, tuition, medical bills, anything that you would like to share with us other than the lack of a paycheck? I understand that, but are there any extraordinary issues?
Well, there's one. I'm in the process of building a home that I can't close on without an income. Puts me in a pretty tough spot.
All right. At this time, are there any other questions from the commission?
I wanted to ask, Mr. Harden kind of led into my question, which was I would ask the judge to kind of describe your interactions with the public
when you're talking about county business. Specifically, you were talking about a map where people drew red lines and invited members of the public to be involved in that. How did that occur? Is your office open to the public? So if someone wanted to come in and make an appointment to talk about a particular issue with you and something they wanted on the agenda, are you available for that type of
thing? Absolutely.
Do people approach you at Rotary or whatever?
Every day, I ain't eaten a hot meal in years, Your Honor. I mean, people approach me at restaurants, at the line waiting to go to the movies in the grocery store. My chief of staff is here today. He'll tell you that my calendar is open to anyone at any time to discuss anything. We put together the Citizens Committee and ask people from each commissioner and judge, Judge Sadler at the time, right before I took office, appointed two citizens from all areas of the county. And we invited all the public that wanted to attend to come to those meetings and give their input on what roads they wanted to see done in their communities, to make sure that they had input in exactly what was going on in this bond issue. We wanted, because the 2011 bond issue failed because they felt like there was not enough information, we wanted to give them every possible opportunity to have input, but in fact, flood information out there. That's why we put the press release out there, to let people know exactly what we had done, and we met with the opposition and come to an agreement. Put the bond issue on the ballot and gave them 2 months to decide how they wanted to cast that vote. And they approved it overwhelmingly. My door is open all the time to anybody who would like to come visit with.
Yes, sir. I have a follow-up question. Judge, notwithstanding the fact that you had this meeting, or this, well, we won't use the term meeting because that's not a legal terminology, but notwithstanding what happened that Friday,
yes, sir.
Could you on your own, and I think you did answer this, but I just wanted reassurances, could you on your own have put this on the agenda, this meeting on Monday on the agenda?
Absolutely. Yes.
And you could have done that on your own?
Yes, sir.
With no discussions or?
Yes, sir.
Whatever you want to call, whatever yes, happened absolutely. Friday, you could have done it on your own?
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Mr. Russell?
Yes, I just have one comment. And it's really for Mr. Harden. I'm a little bit concerned about your gentle, respectful suggestion that this commission be very careful about ignoring what seemed to me, in my words, the will of the majority of the people of the county, and not do something contrary to them. I understand what you're trying to say, and I understand that it appears that the county is supporting the judge and the issue of the bond. We have to consider, you know, our obligations, and I don't know that taking the position that just because a majority of the people want something means it's right. Our history is replete with things that the majority of the people were radically wrong. So I just say going forward, it might be better not to make an issue of that.
Well, I totally agree with you. Certainly is not making it an issue in light of your view of it, but that's not quite what I mean. I don't think the fact that the majority of the people in Montgomery County support him should be the determining factor on your part. I don't mean it that way, and that may be another time that I've inartfully said something. It won't be the first time that I've inartfully said something before this commission. But what I really meant was is that there is a ballot box solution to temporarily removing him from office. Namely, the county attorney charged with that responsibility could have chosen to go forward, and he has chosen not to. Not the majority of the public. The person who has the legal opportunity to civilly seek to remove him has made a decision not to, and that person is an elected person. I was only trying to gently, and I can tell at least as to one member of the commission, unsuccessfully point out that that is a better venue to decide the issue of whether he should be suspended pending trial, or whether or not the presumption innocence should attach and stay until the criminal court has spoken. I think it would be tremendously sad if he is acquitted and yet has been suspended without pay for the period of time that decision was made. and particularly when the people that the legislature has chosen to give the responsibility of having the opportunity to remove him if they choose, the county attorney. But I agree with the underlying thing you're saying, and that is that just the fact that the rule, the majority is frequently legally wrong, that somebody has to stay in charge. Indeed, that's why we have federal judges with lifetime tenure, so they can make unpopular decisions that the majority might not have allowed them to make if they were going to be elected officials. So I totally agree with your general point of view. I'm trying to respectfully suggest I didn't quite mean it the way I think you took it.
Thank you very much for your clarification. I think it's good counsel.
Thank you for your observation.
Any further questions? All right. At this time, Judge, I believe we have five witnesses that would like to briefly make a statement. So I will ask each one of them to come, and then we will give you an opportunity and go on Mr. Harden for a closing statement.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. The first one will be Constable David Hill. And if you'll just come on up and please pull the microphone up. And if you will just, again, say your name for the record.
My name is David Hill. I serve as Constable, Precinct 5, Montgomery County, an office that I've been elected to for the last 34 years. I had about 15 years with the state as a trooper prior to that, so I come from about 49 years of law enforcement experience. So I have a fair judge of people, and I've known Craig Doyle over 30 years. I've watched him work. I watched him work as administrative assistant under a man that I hold in high regard, and that's Malcolm Purvis. Malcolm Purvis, when he voted on the court, he voted what was good for Montgomery County. He did not vote for what was good for Precinct 2 or for Malcolm Purvis. He voted for the county. This man was trained under him and has followed his through that by his entire time on the court as a commissioner. I've seen him make decisions that I disagreed with. Budget, mostly.
For Precinct 2.
And we're going through budget right now, and that's one reason I really would like to see the judge back in office sitting on that bench and helping us get through this time that's going to greatly affect our county. But I've watched him serve. I know the man. I have worked with him, like I say, over 30 years. I know him to be honest. I know him to be dedicated. I know he's not in this for the money. I know what he makes. He's in it for public service. I think I share that enthusiasm with him. I thoroughly love what I do. I can retire any day I want to. I'll leave to leave afternoon. But I like what I do in my community. I know how people feel about this man in our community. While I was off on vacation, they had a great party for he and Charlie in support of them. Everyone I've talked to, public, my constituents, support the judge and the commissioner in this situation. I don't believe there was a single solitary thought of conspiring to get around an Open Meetings Act. I think, and I give him credit, if I'd have been in his shoes, I'd have told the Patriot Pack where to get off, personally. And we wouldn't have a bond issue that we're working with right now that we drastically need. So they went beyond what was good for Charlie and what was good for Craig Doyle. And they did what was good for Montgomery County. They reached out to this group that is a bunch of people I disagree with and was able to come to an agreement of what we all can agree to. We'll vote for this. We'll oppose, thoroughly oppose that. They took off a road that I spoke passionately about and got a nickname constably after that testimony. We needed that bond issue in the world's worst way, and he reached out in an effort not for to benefit him, not to benefit the commissioners, but to benefit Montgomery County. And I admire that in any public servant. Open for questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all's time.
Thank you.
That's the first time I was able to talk to that many judges and enjoy it. I appreciate it.
Commissioner Tatel.
Good afternoon. I'm Commissioner Jack Cagle. I had the privilege in November of 2000 of being sworn in as the County Civil Court at Law Judge of Harris County Civil Court No. 1. And so from that date until October of 2011, I had the privilege of working with this body and with Ms. Willing and dedicated myself to the improvement of the judiciary. My last year of service as a judge, I was actually the president of the Texas County Civil Court at Law Judges and helped represent them as they went through the last legislative session. So I appreciate the work that you do. I want to talk about Judge Dole, formerly Commissioner Dole, as a professional, personally, and then practically in 5 minutes or less. First of all, professionally, when I became a commissioner, it was my duty to represent, at that point in time, 1.2 million people in the north side of Harris County. I am not a Montgomery County resident. I don't get to vote for the folks in Montgomery County. They have their own set of politics. But we have roads and bridges and populations that work back and forth across the creek. I was approached professionally by then Commissioner Dole, who said, we need to work on 249, a project that is for way too long, held to be languished, written off, and together by cooperating with him, we were able to get the involvement of the Texas Department of Transportation, the Harris County Toll Road Association, and both of our counties to cooperate to put together a project that has been desperately needed for the region. We were partners in that process. And through that partnership of basically taking the attitude that two counties do not have to be enemies, but that the rising tide benefits all of our joint residents, I developed a friendship. I began to know this man personally. Those of you who knew me from my days as a judge know that I'm kind of a stick in the mud, very much a stickler, for making sure that the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and that we follow the rules. Sometimes I was criticized for being that way amongst my colleagues. For me, it was easy to become friends with now Judge Dole, then Commissioner Dole, because he worked hard for his constituency, but he also worked hard to do it the right way, not just the easy way. And so I bonded with him, which now leads me to my third point, practically. I still need to finish phase two of 249. I need to finish Kirkendall Bridge. We need to finish Gosling Bridge. Across the creek are four commissioners to where if they have a disagreement, they can't resolve it. I need to have a full and working court in Montgomery County so that we in Harris County continue to do our job of completing these important projects. Practically speaking, by taking one of the three indicted people out of the process, you have put them into a stalemate. Blessedly for Harris County, as a general rule, Montgomery County works well together with each other, and they have not had any problems or disagreements. But when you put a bond issue, when you vote on a process, it means something to those folks who are doing your financing if it's a 4-vote versus a 5-vote. That can impact your percentage rates when you are borrowing money. The judge, quote-unquote, who doesn't do judicial functions like I used to do, is needed administratively and candidly, practically speaking, those of us who are partnering with that county, we could benefit from having a fully functional partner across the creek so that we can do our business efficiently to represent our clients. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll keep it brief. I'm a newly elected city councilman to the city of Conroe. I've known Judge Dole for numerous years now and worked well with him. I know the man's character. I think we talked about earlier how he's been a commissioner before he was a judge. He has an understanding of the Open Meetings Act, and I know him, and I know he wouldn't do that in any way to hurt our county. As a city councilman, our offices are across the street from each other, our city hall, and we work well with the commissioners. And right now, I couldn't have said it any better than Commissioner Cagle, that we're kind of in a stalemate. We need him back in office. because of the character and the way that he works with the people and for the people, there's a lot that goes on continually every day in working with the city. We're the sixth largest city, growing city per capita in the nation. It is imperative that we continue to move down a path that is proactive. And with the county judge, with the character that he has, that he continues to work with the people. We've talked about today, what would you do different? And I don't know how you would do something different. I realize y'all don't understand the Patriot Pack and who he was having to deal with, but they ran roughshod over they almost took control of our county and what was going on based on unfactual information. And I know it was tough for him to go down there and sit down there with them, but it took a lot of character, and that's the kind of character this man has, that he went down there and sat down and they worked out their differences for the greater good of Montgomery County. And I can tell you as a city councilman that we need him back. He's a good man. He believes in his county. I don't believe he did anything wrong, and I don't believe the people that are here today, here supporting him, believe he did anything wrong. And I know y'all have a job to do, but I would ask that y'all come to a conclusion and a decision as soon as you can to reinstate him. Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Chair Page. Yes, ma'am. excuse me. I'm Tommy Gage, the Montgomery County Sheriff. I'm in my 12th year as sheriff there in Montgomery County. Next month will be 46 years I've been in law enforcement. I've lived in Montgomery County for many years. I've known Judge Doyle for over 30 years. In 1996, I left the sheriff's office and went to work out of the commissioner's office as a commissioned peace officer, taking care of environmental problems that were brought to the Precinct 2 commissioner's office, and also any law enforcement situations that came up. I was there rather than have to call the constables or the sheriff's office. So I've known Judge Doyle and his family, his children. I've watched them grow up. I know what kind of family he came from with his mother and dad. They're just people with integrity, good Christian people. And, working with him or for him all these years and now working with him in this position and all, Greg Doyle's a man of integrity. Certainly wouldn't do anything to hurt this county. He loves the county, as you can see. I mean, he's been here all his life, and this is what he's done all his life, is work for the county. So, just like the others have said, he's a good man. We need him back in that position as our county judge. He's an outstanding leader, and we miss him, and we appreciate y'all's time.
Thank you very much. At this time, Judge, do you have any final comments you would like to make?
Well, Madam Chairman, committee members, just, I don't know how else to say it. I spent 30 years of my life trying to do the right thing. And I believe that what I did was for the greater good of Montgomery County. I believe the citizens of Montgomery County will benefit from it. And I would love to be back in that office to work every day to make sure that they have the best possible county judge they can have going forward. I would appreciate that consideration.
I'm going to ask you, among all the things we've raised, to also remember there was no deliberation and decisions made in private here. All this was about is whether to put something on the agenda that, as Mr. Bivens' question surfaced, could have been done without talking to anyone. All he did was listen to citizens and follow through on something he could have done without a meeting, without talking to them, without anyone else. It's just to agree to put something on an agenda, something he could have done unilaterally. There was no meeting in private, in contrary to a quorum or anything else. And I just respectfully ask you to, I have a concern. I would hope that if there was any procedure here that you could reach a decision before August 10th or 12th, if there's any procedure you have internally as to whether this committee could take a position and make a recommendation to the panel beforehand. To be deprived of over a month's salary before a decision, I would ask you to try to figure if there's something y'all could do sooner than August 10 or 12 if you're predisposed to do what we're asking, and that is to put him back in office and let the criminal justice system run its course. If he wasn't in this position like everyone else, he would be being paid, he would be working, and he'd be helping the citizens of Montgomery County. I do particularly appreciate the thoughtfulness of your questions and your courtesies and your time, and I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And at this time, the hearing is concluded, and thank everyone for coming today. Thank you very much.